Hello, everybody. Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. This is our 10th LinkedIn Live interview, and I'm really happy to have my very good friend, Lita Citrone, with us today. And for those of you who don't know Lita, she's the author of Reputation 360. It's really about personal branding. She wrote a book on engaging with veteran talent for employers. She wrote Your Next Mission, to help veterans with their transition. And now our latest book is Success After Service, comes out October 27th, and it's about the job search and career. So that's what we're gonna talk about with Lita today. And I did a little bit of research on Lita as well. She actually has 8 courses on LinkedIn Learning. And I added up how many views those 8 courses have had. And I don't know if even Lita knows this. It's over 939,000 views of her courses. So almost 1 million people have watched what she's written and said about personal branding and veteran transition. So I am thrilled to bring my friend Lita to the show. Welcome, Lita.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't going to add those numbers up. I don't do that kind of math.
Well, are you surprised that it's that high? That's a big number.
It is. It absolutely is. I mean, I think what LinkedIn has done with the learning platform is just such a testament to online content in general. But I'm kind of surprised that the courses have that much followership. So thank you for that. You've made my day.
Yeah. Well, I added mine up and they weren't nearly as high.
Well, I've been at it a little longer than you, Jan.
Yes, you have. And again, 8 courses. So for those of you that have a premium membership, you can go out there and see those. And those that don't, I think you can still get 30 days free.
They offer that. And if you're a veteran, you get a year. But
that's right. If you're a veteran, you get a year. So Lita, let me ask you, and I'm going to zoom in on us here.
Sure.
So everybody can see you. So you've written all these books, and then you started working on this one. I think it was 18 months, 2 years ago, Success After Service. Mm-hmm. So you've been at it. Tell us how it's different than Your Next Mission, how this book's different.
Well, and that's a fantastic question to jump off from, because it was really important to me that it is different. Your Next Mission, a personal branding guide to the military to civilian transition, which is the full title, really does unpack the whole concept of personal brand, right? Who are you? How do you want to show up in the world? And how are you going to manage and build perception and reputation for the assets that you bring? It's a concept that really isn't talked about in military transition. And so when I wrote that book, it went just crazy in terms of sales and reach and impact. And it still continues to do really well. And I'm super proud of it. Success After Service isn't really the focus on personal branding. It's really the idea of how do you create a roadmap for somebody who may be 18, 24 months out from separation, all the way till about 3 years post separation. Because so much happens in that time frame that it's the job search, it's career planning, it's a little bit of personal branding, but it's the focus isn't personal branding.
Right. And when you started the book, of course, we weren't in the middle of a pandemic. and so a lot of the advice was about, is about getting out there and networking and figuring things out. Knowing what you know now, what would you have inserted in there that maybe didn't get put into the book because we weren't in the middle of a pandemic?
You know, I actually asked the publisher that question of, we were putting the book into production in the spring, and the idea was, do we unpack the certain chapters and rework them? But actually things like virtual interviewing and phone video meetings, all of that is covered. Yeah, the body language section of how to shake hands and make good eye contact, that's going to be different if you're doing it through a computer. But the concepts are still the same. You're still going to apply an interview for jobs and use networking to build those relationships. You just might not have the chance to meet people in person for coffee.
Yeah. You know, one thing, I don't know if you can tell, but I am not sitting. as I'm talking,
right?
I got my little $200 stand-up desk here that I prop up, and I find that you know, if I'm presenting to a group, a workshop, if I'm standing up, I'm a lot more animated. I can use gestures. I feel like, you know, I can speak from here, not just here.
Right.
I mean, I'm just wondering, is that something that you think, you know, when people are interviewing that they shouldn't be sitting down or doing one of these, you know? I mean, do you have any video etiquette advice?
Loads of video etiquette. I actually was just teaching a workshop this morning about communication and presenting, and we're training people on virtual presenting, knowing that, you know, hopefully we'll go back to in person. And one of the questions that came up was exactly what you said. If I'm standing, I have more energy and I can express myself. My challenge with that is, you know, because you've seen me on stage, I move around a lot. And my hands fly in and out of the camera lens. So I actually find that when I sit, I channel all the energy into my facial expressions and the energy of my voice, as opposed to letting it sort of dispel by moving around the room. My little webcam is not going to follow me like an audience would if they were in person. Right. But I think one of the biggest things we see with virtual interviewing or even onboarding and working is making sure that your background is clean. I had a call with a client, and in their background was a whiteboard that had all of their prospecting information. So I could see who they were targeting, what the value of that engagement was. And I said to them, all your proprietary information is back there. I've seen kids, you know, diaper pails in the background, beds that aren't made. And really, in this day and age, that's kind of the first place to start with.
Yeah, I find when my wife and I are watching, you know, different things, I'm listening to the person looking at their facial expression. She's like, what's that behind? I mean, she always notices what's behind.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, and Randall Ninzik just said he loves using backgrounds and different things. Let me ask you, let's go back to the Simon Sinek thing. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. You have a really interesting background story that maybe some of the people watching right now don't know about. You know, here's Lita Citron, a civilian who's deeply passionate about helping military veterans. And we know that's not what pays the bills. Pays the bills are corporate clients. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you tell us your why, where all this comes from?
It comes from, I think, a couple places. First of all, the brand values that I anchor everything into for myself and my business are gratitude and generosity. So if I find an opportunity to express what I'm grateful for and share without worrying about being compensated or somehow rewarded, that's in alignment with my brand. I also have two parents who came to this country after wars in Europe ended. My mother actually came to the US from communist Hungary. And what that taught me was, at a very early age, I learned that freedom isn't free. And she taught my brother and I that if you ever get a chance to say thank you, you do, because somebody else sacrificed so we can live in this beautiful American dream. Those two factors combined with a realization in 2009 that the skills and the services that I provide, which are very valued in the corporate and entrepreneurial space, are not being talked about in the military transition. All of that sort of created this wonderful confluence and led me to say, I think I have something that might be helpful.
Okay. But you also had an aha as a mom about that as well. At one point during the war, you know, that you saw a lot of, you know, I mean, when we're Americans were suffering from a lot of casualties, you know, there are some ahas that you got as well.
Well, anytime you hear of someone who's lost in service, it's, you know, I think what civilians often forget is post 9/11 service members and veterans volunteered. We don't have a draft in this country. So military service is completely voluntary. And those mothers and fathers, you know, let their children and embrace the fact that their children wanted to go off and serve. And if they don't come home, I can't even imagine what that would have been like. And in a small, so small way, my helping them transition out of the military is a way of thanking them as well.
Yeah. Well, I know that they appreciate that. And you've been a great supporter of our Crucible expeditions and supplying books and being a sponsor for a lot of what we've done. And those veterans that we've given books to really appreciate it. And it means so much more to them than someone just saying simply, thank you for your service. I mentioned before we went on that I had a few advanced questions we got. One of them is from a great fan of ours from the Leadership Podcast, Peter A. Arthur Smith. He's a former British Army officer. And he asked about, basically, what's the responsibility that the military has? You know, they're really good, as we all know, of turning civilians into soldiers, airmen, sailors, Marines, Coast Guardsmen. But they're not very good at all at turning people back into civilians. What responsibility does the military have? And are you seeing progress there in their work toward that transition?
You know, and it was an interesting question I actually encountered 10 years ago when I was trying to figure out where the pieces to this puzzle were. And I decided not to fight the battle, if you will, of trying to get the military to understand there was a disconnect here. I looked at where the money was, and the money is corporations. Mm-hmm. The military, you're right, they train people to come in and complete a mission, and that's their mission. I believe it's corporate and entrepreneurs and people that want to take advantage of those skills and resources when they come out that should also invest in that process. But I think what it also begs is a question of who do you fix, right? Do you fix the veteran or do you fix the employer? Because the disconnects are there, mm-hmm. and we know that. And you and I, Jan, we have listed mm-hmm. them out hundreds of times, but it really isn't about fixing one and then the problem solved. My approach has always been, if I help the military service member understand their value proposition, clearly be able to create value that is appealing to that employer, and then they're more empowered to have a better conversation. At the same time, if that employer sees what the military veteran brings into the workforce and gets past some of those implicit biases and mm-hmm. misconceptions, now we're leveling the playing field. And that's really yep. where I've taken more of the approach instead of trying to fix the military. I do think they're constantly making improvements. Yeah. I don't know if it's there yet because I'm not going through that. I teach in the TAP class here at the Air Force Academy. I don't really want to judge that. I just know that I'm one person trying to make a difference and I think it's working.
and for those that don't know, TAP stands for a military acronym.
Program. Yeah.
But say again.
Transition Assistance Program.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the challenge, I think, I'm going to get your opinion on this. When I'm coaching executives, one of the first questions we start with, because let's face it, everybody is in transition. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're a 68-year-old CEO, you're thinking about the next thing. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that I ask those executives is, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And that's a hard question. I wonder out loud to you, is that one of the hardest questions that veterans need to answer right up front? Because I see a lot of them being very opportunistic, who will hire me, instead of them being very intentional and saying, well, this is the life I want to live. These are the people I want to work with. This is the kind of work I want to do. Do you see that? Or is there a little bit of cart before the horse sometimes?
Interesting question. You know, it relates definitely to the book, because in the book I map out, right, what do you want financially? What do you want for your family? What do you want for your career? What do you want spiritually and emotionally? Making sure that your career path aligns with all of those. So I don't know if the man or the woman leaving the military who grabs the first job and says, oof, okay, I don't have to worry about transition now, if they're doing it because they're opportunistic or because they're not used to this concept of choice. And one of the things I teach in my transition program is that choice to a civilian is everything. We live for choice because choice is power. It means I'm choosing the clients. I'm choosing the places I show up. I'm choosing how I dress for those opportunities. But if you're coming out of a military culture, which doesn't necessarily promote independent choice and all of that, then all of a sudden we're telling you, thank you for your service. Now go out and choose what you want to do. And you're right. Asking what do you want is often hard, but also the why questions, to your reference back to Simon Sinek. I find that most of the men and women in my programs get most uncomfortable when I start talking about who they are as individuals, who they are as
personal branding.
Yeah. And the values and knowing that we're all in this, you know, this merry-go-round that is going to stop for each one of us. What do you want it to matter? You know, how do you want it to matter? That's when it gets tricky, because again, it's just concepts that they just haven't been exposed to.
Yeah. And when we spoke to General Dempsey, you know, he had the best, simplest advice. And he was, he said, you know, you joined the service because you wanted to make a difference. You're passionate about something. So the biggest mistake you can make is to go out and do something you're not passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting. Hey, I wanted to throw up a couple comments we've gotten.
Sure.
This is from Randall. And he says, as a retired military member, thank you for your service. The focus is on retention, reenlistment, not reentry to civilian world. Randall, you say this might not sit well. I think most people would probably agree with you. My opinion and my bias is a lot of the people that are helping with transition are people that haven't been out in the business world or the corporate world. So that's kind of tough. Then we've got another comment here from David Ortiz, who's a veteran and running for office there in Littleton, Colorado. He's a past guest on this show. And he said, the only role the DOD should play is working with the ACE, which is interesting. You have an opinion on that, Lita?
You know, well, it's. I think what David's getting to is the idea that you can have all of this military experience that doesn't transfer across, right? So, for instance, someone who was a medic in the Army who wants to, you know, go into nursing school or go into medical school isn't able to transfer a lot of that credit across. And we have to start looking at real world experience. Oftentimes what somebody will see in a battlefield or even in a military, you know, high stress situation is going to be leaps and bounds, which you're going to learn in a classroom. But how do we map those so our men and women coming out can enter the workforce or enter education at a more equitable level? Mm.
Yeah. Well, and I can say, you know, I'll share this with the audience and David, and this is a long time ago, decades ago. But when I got out and went to college, I remember I had, I think it was 12 hours of CLEP credit, college level entrance program. And then I had they gave me 17 hours of credit toward being a Green Beret medic. So I basically was able to finish college in 3 years, which meant I was able to get back into the Army as an officer in the workforce, making money and not spending time in college, and to accelerate that. And again, I don't know if those same opportunities, but I can tell you, I had no GI Bill. I was in that really, you know, crappy period between Vietnam and today. And there is nada. Well, let me ask you, you know, as you work with a lot of people, what do you think is the biggest mistake, you know, people are making as they're transitioning out? And I wonder if you can answer it in a couple ways.
Okay.
The biggest mistake they make before they get out and the biggest mistake they make in the first year or two of their, you know, their transition.
So before they get out is underestimating what it will look like to actually leave the military. And that's for someone who's served 4 years or 34 years, underestimating the length of time that it will take to reintegrate. And I don't just mean find a job, but actually reintegrate. That's one of the mistakes before, but the other one is networking. understanding that if you start building those relationships, and right now we're doing them by computer, we're doing phone calls, but starting to reach out and build relationships before you exit, that some of the best stories in the book really were about folks that had started cultivating and curating really good relationships that once they actually left the military, they were teed up beautifully for entry into positions that weren't even advertised because people knew them and they had a sense of who they were and that what they were looking for. After separation, I think one of the biggest mistakes is choosing a job for the wrong reason. And we all get it. If I've got medical bills to pay and my children need food, I'm going to take any job. I'm going to work, retail. It doesn't matter. I'll work in any environment legally, in any environment to provide for my family. But if I have a choice, if I can build a career instead of just get a job, that's a different mindset. And there's so much pressure on the people coming out of the military to just get something. Right. Yeah, calms down. Everybody calms down. But sometimes those aren't necessarily the right choices.
Well, let's take that answer into four segments, if you don't mind, into somebody that's getting out as junior enlisted. Maybe they're late 20s and they attain the rank of E6. Mm-hmm. Somebody that's spent maybe 8 years and they get out as a captain. Mm-hmm. And then you have a senior NCO, like a sergeant major, a master sergeant, or a lieutenant colonel or a colonel. I mean, so you have sort of four buckets: junior enlisted, junior officer, senior enlisted, senior officer. Do you think there's different, do you have different advice for each of those four groups?
No. I mean, I really don't, because each of them are individuals, and that senior person might say, I'm not ready to hang it up. I want to contribute. I want to have a civilian job that's meaningful. And how do I take the assets of what I've done in my career so far and convert them into my next chapter? That young person who might have started to build some skills might still look at their, at the runway ahead of them and say, okay, how do I take what I've done so far and start to create a path for myself? It starts with you in a sense of what you want. And it may mature different for somebody who's younger, who hasn't had as much life experience, because whether it's in the military or in a civilian environment, some things come with gray hair, right? And more life experience can start to evolve that thinking. But no, I think either person, and I've coached both. I've coached 3-star generals who are asking the same questions as someone who, is being medically retired early.
With your perspective with the employers that are looking at talent, do you think they view those four different categories differently? I mean, is one more attractive? Is one easier than another?
I think what's interesting with the employers that I'm working with is there's often what they don't know. So they'll see certain titles, and there's a cachet, because I remember seeing a movie where somebody had that title and they were bossing people around. So I'm assuming that title is really impressive, but they don't necessarily know what it means. And that's just an education piece. But keep in mind, somebody with a higher rank coming into the civilian sector may or may not want a higher rank position in the corporate world. Some people just want something that's a little bit easier or not as much pressure or accountability. Mm-hmm. But the employers need to be educated. And I think the title or the rank is one piece, but whoever's going to sit in front of them and say, this is who I am, this is what I understand about the company and what you're looking for, and here's how what I did in the past lines up with what you're looking for, and here's what we could expect to create in the future, that's value proposition. And whoever can articulate that, I think, has an advantage.
Yeah. I was just thinking about the question I asked you about the biggest mistake I think people make. And I want to bounce this off you, because this is my observation. You've done a lot more research and spoken to a lot more people. But there's, two mistakes. One, you kind of hinted at it, is about networking. Most people coming from the military know how to spend money, how to manage lots of dollars of equipment, but they don't understand how to make money. how to generate demand, how to sell something, even though they all have experience selling. Mm-hmm. They just don't realize it.
Right.
They've spent their whole time in the military influencing other people. Mm-hmm. So that's one, is really understanding what it means to sell and not car salesman kind of sell.
Right.
The other one is, and I've seen this on the Crucible oftentimes, because people are so enamored with people's military experience that they'll ask them a million questions. And I find that it's hard for some of the military folks to turn that off mm-hmm. and get just as curious about the business world or the corporate world or another world than people are about them.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, and I've said to people before, they're not going to become a commando, but you're going in their world. So
right.
you need to get curious about them. Do you see that?
I do. And there's actually two things that can happen with that. And I've experienced both. On the first hand, when you ask questions, and if you know how to ask good questions of somebody who's got prior military, you know how to sort of draw them out, then yes, they'll start talking. And what can happen is they tell you information that's way too much for a civilian to hear. I don't have context. I wasn't trained. Maybe I don't understand the lingo. Maybe what you're describing has become suddenly very graphic. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to figure out how to get out of a conversation. That's certainly a problem. The other one is that I've been part of many conversations. As you know, I've worked very closely with a lot of special operations folks. And we'll sit around and they'll start talking. And then all of a sudden, they realize there's a civilian sitting there. And they stop the conversation. So I never know how the story ends. I'm sure it turned out fine, but you know that I run into a lot. And it's just a nuance of communication that I teach. You know, make sure you ask the other person about themselves, because your favorite topic will always be you. My favorite topic is me. So if all we're doing is talking about you, then we're not talking about my favorite topic.
Right.
Who knows what I could share with you if you give me an opportunity to get some airtime, and that could be really valuable.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I have seen where, you know, veterans come out on the Crucible and they'll say, ask me anything.
Yeah.
And the civilian, the executives will say, I really want to know about this. And then about halfway through, you can tell like they really didn't want to know this much.
Yeah.
Like they're not going to sleep well. And that it is interesting. We got a, you know, Steve Bain, I think, don't you? From Beyond the Uniform?
Yes, absolutely.
Podcast. So Steve's asking, have you seen any trends in service members utilizing credentialing programs like AF Cool, Army Ignite, I'm sure that's Air Force Cool, Army Ignite, et cetera, get professional credentials while on service to help bolster their transition?
You know, Steve, that's not something I'm personally familiar with. Jan, are you?
Mm-mm, not at all. Sorry, Steve.
It's something to look into for us, though. We'll follow up on that.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, we asked about some of the mistakes, Lita, that you've seen. And I'm sure your book's got a couple success stories. Let's hear one. We want people to buy the book and buy the book for all. And really, it's not about just buying the book for yourself. What we're hoping that people do is they buy the book and they share it with veterans and actually maybe even mentor. And I'll put a shout out to an example of two fellows in Chicago, Jim Vassilopoulos and Tim Anderson. Both are always saying, hey, are there veterans I can help? Pro bono, 100%. And they do all kinds of things and, you know, completely unsung heroes. So anyway, that's what we're hoping happens with your book.
Well, and I will say too, and I'll tease to this, that we're going to run a promotion where civilians or anybody actually can buy the book and we will take responsibility for distributing it to a veteran who doesn't have the resources to be able to buy it. And that's something I had to work out with the publisher. A lot of people expressed interest, but I think it's going to be a great way that other people can support our military, even if you don't have direct connections. But remind me the question.
A success story.
success stories. So one of the things that I love about this book is there are so many stories. I mean, the acknowledgments page on this book is huge. And people like my good friend Jan shared their path. So we have three paths sort of talked about in the book. One is the path to employment, right? So you're coming out of the military, you're going to get a job in corporate. We talk about nonprofit and government, but it's really a path to corporate that we focus on. We also have the path from military to education, because we know that a lot of people, as you alluded, Jan, are taking advantage of the GI Bill, perhaps even coming into the market in this time when maybe job opportunities have shifted, and they're using this time to shore up their and upskill their education. So we talk about that path. And then we have the path to entrepreneurship. And Jan, I know you shared your story, which is detailed and chronicled very well in the book. And I'll have to share that with you so you can see what you said. But these are real people who, what is such an honor is they put their name to it. And not all the stories worked out beautifully. You know, some of them, I've got a Navy SEAL, Chris, who says it wasn't a smooth transition and there was a lot he didn't know. And my client, Doug, who kind of, you know, went into Wall Street right before the market crashed and had to really figure things out after that. But they're all real people who had real experiences that are going to benefit the men and women coming out in the next few years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's people, I mean, what's your thought? Some of the veterans will say to the people that have transitioned years ago will say to people transitioning, they'll say things like, you know, the transition never ends. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's true?
I often use that as well, because I think if you think about it like a finite time, then you almost feel like you're done at a certain point. But what if you chose that first job for the wrong reasons, and now it's 3 years later and you're faced with the fact that you're actually transitioning then? What does that do to your outlook? So yeah, transition, as you started off, we're always transitioning. Careers level up, we pivot, we change. Sometimes things happen, traumatic events happen to our career. So having a mindset of transition and knowing that if you've got the foundation and the basics, you're equipped to handle what's going to come your way. It's very similar to military training. You're not trained to run every drill in every scenario. You're given enough tools that whatever scenario you're presented with, you have those resources to draw upon. That's really how we have to think about it.
You know, something just occurred to me. You know, we come into the military in a cohort, you know, a platoon, whatever it might be. And you're around people that are going through the same thing you're going through. And that makes it bearable. Mm-hmm. And I reflect, I never thought about this before, but when I got out, I joined a great company and they happened to do this experiment. And my little training class was 30 people and 17 of us were all the same age, 27 years old, all had been military officers. And we were sort of a cohort and we were all over the country. But I remember thinking, gosh, if other people that I think are really good and I respect made the same decision to go in the same industry and the same company, that's comforting. Mm-hmm. They're going through the same thing and the same transition. And I never thought about it before, but that's probably had a lot to do with what I would consider a fairly smooth transition, you know, out. And, you know, I've done some mastermind groups with folks, but I wonder, you know, if that's part of it too, is putting people that are headed in the same direction together. You've worked with companies that have military veteran recruiting programs. I mean, are they more successful than others at helping them and incorporating?
I think what you're touching on is how do you take somebody out of an environment that is so family oriented, right? You refer to them as your brothers and sisters. How do you take somebody from that close knit, got your six, I'm here for the environment and throw them into a corporation where everybody's agenda is different? Veteran recruiting strategies aside, I think the companies that are doing well have employee resource groups that include military, and more of them are doing that. That's where you allow employees to self-identify as prior military. You might have a separate track or include military spouses. You might even include civilians, supporters, military supporters, people who don't have a personal connection but want to learn how they can help and embrace their colleagues. That's where they recreate that system of self-supporting, you know, we're protecting each other, we're going through this process. They may not all come in as a cohort in the, you know, onboarding process, but at least you're going to find people in the company who might have a similar background or skill set or experience that you had. I can't even imagine what that would feel like if somebody spent that much time in a culture that supportive and suddenly exits that. It has to be very isolating.
Yeah. I wonder, I think you're right. And I also wonder if this pandemic is going to force people that aren't happy, you know, staying in, they don't want to do 20 to stay in because of the economic uncertainty. Have you heard anything about that?
I'm getting more and more questions. I do a lot of mentoring, as you know, and I'm getting more and more questions about, you know, should I just take another service? Should I go full time? All these options are now on the table, whereas seven months ago, I don't think the conversation, I think they would have had the conversation for different reasons. And I don't know that it's going to be that different a year from now or 2 years from now. As I often share, there are people, even when the market is great, who can't find a job. And there are people now who are not finding jobs or finding jobs. So, you know, if you've got the right offer at the right time, that's brilliant. But what could you do differently? So maybe if your career path was more linear and now those opportunities have changed, how could you change? How can you look at education? How could you look at doing your work differently to make yourself valuable? Because a lot of us, I mean, you and I've talked about this. We've had to look at our business offering, and you and I aren't on stages right now. We're doing virtual programs. We're coaching differently now. So I think that's what many of the service members or recently separated veterans I'm talking to are starting to think about. They know the option is to stay in, but that may not be what they want.
Right. We just got, here's Randy, just said, Randall, I don't know if it's Randy or Randall, but Randall, thanks for interacting with us. My firm started a podcast where we interview veterans in the firm and tell our stories, and it's really helped. You know, I'll put a shout out to Beyond the Uniform with Steve Bain and Justin Nasiri. Also, you know, our own podcast, the Leadership Podcast, we've had probably a quarter to a third of our guests have been veterans, just trying to help get the word out.
I'll also give a little plug for Randall, because he's also mentioned in the book. He works for a very large real estate firm, and he's a huge advocate for the kinds of things that we're talking about, and shared his story in the book as well. So hopefully that'll be another reason for people to check it out.
Good. Well, I've got a couple more little questions, and then I want to kind of end and tie in this work with your personal branding work. We're on LinkedIn Live, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, but we're on LinkedIn Live. Resume versus LinkedIn profile. What's your advice there?
Yes.
Because I have a bias, and I want to hear what your advice is for the veterans out there. Resume, LinkedIn profile.
Well, the reason I say yes is because I think the resume is one of those necessary evils. And as a branding professional, you know, everything I focus on is forward. A brand is always about an experience of what could come. A resume is the complete opposite. A resume looks backward and says what you've done in the past. But the reason it's an and is we need them for certain HR procedures, right? So if you're human resource procedures, if you're applying for a job, they will likely ask for a resume. They will likely ask you to upload and complete an online application. But LinkedIn is like an unbelievable tool. It is not a resume, and it shouldn't be thought of as a resume. It should be thought of more as a personal billboard or website where you tell your story. So they should match. And I always say, make sure your resume and your LinkedIn profile don't conflict. You say on one that you're passionate about social change, and you say on the other what you dream about is project management. Like, wait a minute, they got a match, but they work together. So your LinkedIn profile is where I learn more about who you are as a person, what you're passionate about. Maybe you talk about gaps in your resume, or you explain how what you've done in the military is positioning you for what you're looking for. You can go into so much more detail and add rich media to your LinkedIn profile and connect with people and really showcase who you are. Whereas a resume has certain formats that we have to conform to because of human resource requirements. I'd love to hear your take now.
Yeah, well, you know, as a former CEO and somebody that did a lot of interviewing, I really didn't pay attention to the resume. I thought the LinkedIn profile told me much more about how you were engaged, how many connections you had. And as we know, I mean, we basically start at the bottom and go up. You know, did you go to school? What kind of education? You know, not because, you know, we want to see if you're educated. We want to see drive and ambition and, you know, forward momentum. So, I always think that's important. And I, you know, my little pet peeves are having a terrible picture, you know, little things like that. Because, you know, that's as good as you're going to get. You know, what you put out there at the very beginning in a resume, LinkedIn, that's your best stuff. Anything you're going to offer to the employer is probably a little bit of a notch below because you're not going to have as much time to make it perfect.
And well, so thinking of the billboard, exactly. Right. Would you put that photo alongside a highway for people to call you and get hired? Probably not.
Yeah. So I think that's, yeah, I think that's a big deal. So we've got, you know, we've got some input on when you're transitioning out, you know, as that career gets going, and you just touched on a little bit of the branding, you know, how do you see all the advice you've given veterans connecting to all the work you've done, you know, your entire life on this personal branding, reputation management, all those different things? What's the confluence between the two?
For me, it's really walking the talk. You know, one of the foundations of personal branding is knowing what your values are and making sure that you have action that maps to that. That's the only way to get credibility. Values plus action equals credibility. And I am living proof that, you know, my values of gratitude and generosity, I have many values, but those are the two that I truly make decisions through. It led me to finding this community that I was able to show my appreciation through the generosity of my training and my writing and coaching. I am rewarded tenfold, but that's not the point. The point wasn't to go in with that. I remember when I wrote Your Next Mission and my husband said to me, how many do you plan to sell? I said, you know what? If one person's life has changed, that's all that matters. And it really is that way. So I am living proof that if you do listen to your brand and you make an agreement that you will stay true to your values, opportunity shows up. And my corporate clients really appreciate the work that I'm doing with the military. And some of them have come along in the journey and have found opportunities through me. So that's just an added benefit. But whatever the values are that you're building credibility and reputation around, it's very important that the public see evidence of that. And I think this is just one place that they have.
Yeah. It's about what I'm hearing you say is it's about being intentional. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I think that's really scary for our veterans and for a lot of people is there's so many options. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming. When I was getting out, the recruiters basically said, there's two things you can do as a junior military officer. You can go into manufacturing management, or you can go into business to business sales. Hmm. And I remember literally thinking, I don't want to wear a hairnet. that's what I thought. And then I thought, well, I don't want to sell. But I mean, it literally, that was the choice. One of the things that I say to people, and I'd love for you to reflect on this and offer your thoughts, is I say to people all the time, you know, if it were me, I mean, here's what I would do. I would have a hypothesis. I think the business world's biggest challenge is X. Mm-hmm. And then I would find a whole bunch of people that are doing jobs that I think I might like and call them up or write them or text them or LinkedIn with them and ask if I could speak with them. Mm-hmm. And I would ask them a series of questions. I would write that down. I would aggregate it. And I would have some sort of, you know, would it validate my hypothesis about the biggest challenges? And then I would go back to those 10 people and say, here's what I found. Hmm. And so then you've got a little mini research. So as you're going out and trying to get a job, you can say, hey, one of the things I did and again, nobody else has done this. I actually did a little mini research project and I met so-and-so and I met so-and-so and so-and-so. And you know, who knows, maybe one of those 10 people would say, you know, we got a position here. Mm-hmm. And so you're not asking anybody for a job. You're not, I mean, you're just saying, I want to interview you. I want your advice. Who's going to turn down a veteran and say, no, I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to give you 15 minutes. I mean, who's going to do that? And if they do turn you down, you don't want to talk to them anyway.
What you're describing is what we call informational interviews. And when mm-hmm. I started my business in 2008, right? Who does mm-hmm. that? Who starts a business in 2008? I did. Turned out to be a good decision, but I didn't know at the time how hard it was going to be. But I had never started a company before. And I did exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I called anybody who had built a company. I didn't care if it was a dry cleaners, a consulting yeah. business, a widget manufacturer. And I did exactly that. And I asked a series of same questions so I could get the data points that would help me create a plan. I threw out the extremes, and that's where I learned how to build a business. Yeah. And we talk about informational interviews. If you're applying to a company, there are people on LinkedIn who work at that company or have worked at that company who would probably be happy to tell you what it's like to work there, what helps people succeed, why people leave, and what you might have as additional narrative going into an interview. Absolutely. Yeah. Informational interviews. And you're not asking for a job. It's yeah. very important you stay to that contract.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did that. I mean, over 30 years ago when I was getting out, I did those. And I remember they were called informational interviews. Well, let me just remind everybody, Lita's book comes out October 27th. Mm-hmm. And you can pre-order it now. Mm-hmm. And you can go through Lita360, right? Is your website.com?
Go to Amazon. Just go to Amazon. Get on the pre-order. And everybody's got an Amazon account, it seems, these days. Or through Lita360, but I'll probably reroute you. So,
yeah. Well, let me give you sort of the last word, Lita, if you could. You know, how would you, you know, what would you leave as a final thoughts and or challenge to, you know, the audience listening and the veterans that are in the midst of transition?
The final thoughts I would have are something that was told to me a long time ago, and that is that somebody coming out of the military isn't looking for charity. Not looking for a handout or special treatment, that you're used to hard work, you're used to being resilient and adapting and pivoting and adjusting. But what's really important is finding something that's meaningful. And you deserve it probably more than anybody because of your service and sacrifice to protecting our freedom in this country. So I hope you would take the time, really think about what you want, but also why. Why do you want that thing? Really take ownership of your transition. There are tons of options out there, but not all of them are right for you. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you want to. So start by thinking about who you are, how you want to show up, and the value you want to create. And then let us help you find those opportunities through networking, through relationship building, and by making sure we can find you when those opportunities hit. And thank you for your service.
Awesome, Lita. Thank you so much. And again, you know how to reach us, and we appreciate you listening. And Lita, thank you for your service.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Jan. You did the hard job, not me. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you later.
Thanks.